from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Over the last 2 years, homeless populations have surged throughout the Bay Area. That's according to federal data released last week. We'll speak to San Francisco Chronicle reporter Kevin Fagan about what's contributing to the rise and how state and local officials are responding. But first, longtime president and CEO of the World Affairs Council, Jane Wales, will step down this year. We'll hear how the organization has evolved over the past 20 years, and we'll get her thoughts on the latest international news, including the U.S. trade dispute, tensions with Iran, and more. That's all next, after the news. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. After 20 years leading the World Affairs Council, CEO Jane Wales is stepping down. She joins us now to discuss the council's accomplishments, and we're going to talk with her about U.S.-China trade conflict, tensions with Iran, and more in international news. And welcome, Jane Wales.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's a delight to be on.
Well, it's a delight to have you, and I've been having you on the program here for 20 years now and have always appreciated your expertise and your extraordinary knowledge about foreign affairs. In fact, let me just congratulate you first on serving so well and for so long. And you're stepping into another role in the Aspen Institute, which must be exciting and I think challenging. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I swear I have the best job in San Francisco.
We might compete on that.
Are tied for the best job in San Francisco. And I think what's wonderful for me, and I suspect for you in the various roles you serve, because you have multiple jobs, is that you're constantly learning. Each day I'm thrown into a different issue area, which I may or may not know something about, may or may not know is interesting, until I'm thrown into it, have to bone up on the issue and be ready to ask questions, the answers to which I already know.
Well, we do share that role, too. That is what I do day after day and what you do so extraordinarily well. And, I go really back with the World Affairs Council. Peter Tarnoff I used to do programs with before I was even in public radio. There have been some fine people who have served, and we wish you the best.
Thank you. In fact, Peter and I served in the State Department in the 70s.
And in the Clinton administration, yes, as well.
I'm trying to remember. Did he go back into the Clinton administration? He was in the Carter administration. He was executive secretary at the State Department.
Right.
Exceedingly important job and brilliantly suited for it. He came out here, ran the World Affairs Council, and then later went to the Council on Foreign Relations and ran that institution in New York. So he's a good San Franciscan and a good international voice.
Speaking of the Council of Foreign Relations and International Voice, I was invited by Richard Haass a few months ago, in fact, to go to New York and interview him in conjunction with about 70 journalists from Canada and the United States. It turned out that Haass had to go to Europe, so Fareed Zakaria filled in for him. And it was the two of us talking about how international news could be better tied to local stories. And these local journalists were really eager to hear and to be involved in that. I wondered if you have some thoughts about that.
Oh, I think that's a brilliant idea. Richard usually does have brilliant ideas. And if your second choice is Fareed Zakaria, I'd say you're doing pretty well with that as your fallback interviewee. It's a very important subject. I mean, in this era of globalization, I think the interconnection between local and global issues is sort of inescapable. We can all see it. But the question is it reflected in the news we get each day? I'd argue that the news we're getting nowadays seems to just kind of lunge from tweet to tweet and is not necessarily the big issues that are touching the rest of the world and touching people like you and me back at home.
Speaking of that, I read Nick Kristof this weekend in the New York Times. He had an article about Yemen, and he said there really is very little public attention given to what the United Nations has deemed the worst humanitarian crisis that we are now living with. And then he went into kind of an explanation about how, with all this talk about saber rattling and war with Iran, and over the weekend the president, of course, tweeted, said, Iran better not threaten us. We can destroy Iran and we can make it go away. All that talk notwithstanding, he made a point that I thought was very telling. He said, we already are involved in a war with Iran and Yemen because
Absolutely.
We're back behind the Houthis with all kinds of munitions and armaments and actually supporting, in effect, the starvation of children.
Yes, the spread of cholera, it is indeed the worst humanitarian crisis in the world and probably in our lifetimes, matched perhaps only by the genocide in Europe and the actually predates both of our coming into this world, but in the 30s and 40s. It is also an example of sliding into war almost without kind of a clear decision-making process or a clear sense of where it would head and what our interests were. After all, Barack Obama initially engaged in Yemen with the purpose of targeting al-Qaeda operatives who were there. Then, here we are years later, locked into this war that not only is creating the most extraordinary cruelty and pain, but it also is right in the midst of a region where things are falling apart. You've got Syria, you've got Yemen, you've got Iraq is not all resolved, Afghanistan is not all resolved, and as you note, we're looking at Iran in a very different way. I'm not sure the world can afford the collapse of Iran, given those set of circumstances in the region.
Well, it's ironic that President Trump seems to be maybe on the more pacific side of this between particularly John Bolton, but also Mike Pompeo.
Yeah. It's tonight we're having our annual dinner, at which we celebrate leaders from all three sectors, and one of them is H.R. McMaster, the former National Security Advisor. And as you know, President Trump said he was firing H.R. because he was rude and condescending, and then he lurched to John Bolton, who is the expert in being rude and condescending. So I'm not quite clear, but you're right.
And who has been itching for a war with Iran. I mean, that's
exactly.
Abundantly clear.
I think that is what's so striking, is that both he and Pompeo came to their positions with a bias and a long history of seeking out of anti-Iran behavior, let's put it that way. President Trump came to the office wanting to extricate himself from wars overseas, much as Barack Obama did. Pulled out of, or said he would pull out of Syria, and many people feel prematurely. They all came to office without the same goals when it comes to Iran.
Well, there was a resolution in Congress to essentially extricate us from Yemen that was vetoed by the president. And one has to wonder, does he really have any sense of a Middle East policy here? I mean, America first notwithstanding, and, make America great and everything, but nevertheless, it seems to be on the side of the Saudis and the Israelis for the most part.
Yeah, they're absolutely close to both of those countries. And as you know, the Saudis have been particularly the crown prince behind some pretty despicable moves, and Yemen being one of them.
Nick Khrushchev calls him the mad prince. he's responsible also for the assassination of Khashoggi. That's pretty clear now, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and cover-up. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm talking with Jane Wales, who is president and CEO of the World Affairs Council, now vice president of the Aspen Institute. And let's just touch upon China and the trade war, because the president said earlier today he's very happy with this trade war. I mean, he may not be going to war with Iran, but there's a trade war with China. And where do you see this going?
Yeah, he has said in the past that trade wars can be won. And I'm not sure what the concept is that he has in mind. When you've got these sort of dueling tariffs, the folks that pay for that are consumers, American consumers, but also American workers, because we have, companies with supply chains that include China. So, and of course, you've seen what happens with the with the stock market, and think of how many pension plans are there, how many of us are going to retire or do care about what's happening in the stock market.
So president who seems to believe somehow, despite what he likes to brag about is his Ivy League business education, that doesn't seem to realize that money doesn't go into the coffers when you're in a trade war. He thinks we're going to get rich off of a trade war.
Remember that he has, throughout his career, led a privately held company, not a public company where you've got folks to to serve and to atone to and you know, to your stockholders. He's never had that. He's never had a job that involved that kind of accountability. This job, President of the United States, is all about accountability.
Talking about a range of international events that are going on with Jane Wales, and we're also going to talk about some things that she has, through her leadership, stewarded as far as the World Affairs Council is concerned. But in the meantime, let me invite you, our listeners, to join us, because we would like to hear from you talking about Yemen and Iran and China, and certainly find out what Jane's thoughts are on Venezuela as well. And you can join us right now. Our toll-free number is available to you. The number to call, 866-733-6786. We welcome your call. So please feel free to be part of the program. And again, you can join us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. What are you anticipating about Venezuela, Jane?
Oh, that's a really interesting case, and it's right in our neighborhood. I think many of us thought or hoped that very early on, President Maduro would be forced to step down. He's been a very corrupted administration.
As likely to concede as Assad is in Syria, perhaps.
Yeah, well, and he does have some help from the same source, and that's Russia.
And
his own military, which appears to be divided. And I think many people hoped that the military would join with Guaido, who is the leader of the parliament and acting as interim president. The right thing happened at the beginning, and the U.S. did the right thing. And the Trump administration, as well as governments throughout Europe and Latin America, most importantly, recognized Guaido as the leader and called for Maduro to step down. When we do things in coalition, we're more likely to be successful. But, of course, local realities are affecting this, and Maduro is still hanging on.
And diplomacy seems to have gone by the wayside in this administration.
Except
with North Korea, perhaps.
Brinksmanship is a big part of how diplomacy is conducted. So you'll see this with respect to China, with respect to Iran, with respect to North Korea.
I'm thinking more of a traditional diplomacy where you have people from the State Department going out and doing the hard work that means establishing relationships, building rapport, et cetera. It seems not necessarily to be in the radar of this administration.
Yeah. We do think the Trump administration does diplomacy in reverse. It starts with the president, the person who would be signing the deal under normal circumstances, and then if things fall apart, which they often do because the planning hasn't happened, then we're sort of forced to walk away. Usually it runs the other way. You have the staff, you have assistant secretaries and others negotiating and then presenting the president with a deal he can sign.
Again, we're talking with Jane Wales, president and CEO of the World Affairs Council. She is now vice president of Aspen Institute. We'll take that job over in September. Let's just talk quickly, if we could, about some of the accomplishments. The World Affairs Weekly is back on the air. We've got Ray Suarez and Marcos Kounalakis, and this is pretty exciting stuff. It's back here on KQED.
Yeah, this is really fun. I asked two people to join me as co-hosts on World Affairs, our weekly show that KQED so generously offers us. Ray Suarez, who is a dream to work with, and Marcos Kounalakis, who is also, you know, ever willing to step in.
And now Mr. Lieutenant Governor of California.
Yes, that's right. His wife, Eleni, is the Lieutenant Governor. But he comes from print media, and of course, Ray comes from broadcast media. And so it makes for a very strong team, I'd like to say. And I often say to people, you would think that Ray Suarez would be a bit of a diva. I mean, he's had every great role you can think of.
He's one of the good guys.
He's the easiest guy in the world to work with, and just a joy. So, yeah.
And you created the Global Philanthropy Forum. Let's just talk about that. This is a peer learning network of philanthropists, actually committed international causes. Charles Koch, no less, big target for progressives, but was involved.
Yeah. Well, he spoke. I interviewed him on stage. But yeah, I mean, way back when I first came to the Bay Area, I kept meeting people who'd created tremendous wealth in their 30s and 40s, and that wealth played only one role in their lives, and that is that it served as a metric of their success. They didn't necessarily know what they could do with that money to advance the public good. And so we proselytized. We created built a network of philanthropists on the assumption that entrepreneurs like affecting change. That wasn't what held them back, but they didn't know if philanthropy worked. And so we try to show what works. We've since a couple of African philanthropists who attended the Global Philanthropy Forum asked us to build a similar network in Africa, which we did, reaching out to Africans who would give where they made their wealth. We did a similar thing in Brazil, in Colombia, and I hope under my successor more to come.
You know who that successor is going to be yet?
No. And I wouldn't tell you.
Is there an international search or a national search?
It's a national search. And I do know, look, the Bay Area is filled with talent. And so finding someone who's got policy chops, who's got standing in philanthropy and who can do the KQED show will not be hard. And, of course, they're looking well beyond the Bay Area as well.
Well, you've done an exceptional job. And, again, congratulations, although
Thank
I hate
you.
To see you going. You've been a pal. Calls. Martin, you're first up. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is, do you believe that this country cannot be in a war? It seems like even if we waved a magic wand in the Middle East, suddenly we'd be at war with some other part of the world. I don't know if economically, socially, democratically, militarily, that we can be outside of a war.
I think we can be outside of a war, and we have it at various times throughout our history. What you do have to look out for, and I really agree with the thrust of your question, you have to look out for a kind of an acceptance that is a natural course, and a willingness to enter into adventures that may not include a well thought out end game. So your worry is the right worry, but I do think our country does its best. I think with the when not in war, I think one of the things that influences people like Martin and me is that the Second World War ended up spurring real economic progress because of the investments made. We're making investments without war now.
And let me thank Martin for his call. We'll go right to another caller. That's you, Bruce. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think with Bolton and Pompeo, I think they're just so tempted by the good old days of, puppet dictatorship that they're just jonesing for what they can do with Iran right now. And with the Crown Prince, the Shah's son, at 58 now, trained by the U.S. Air Force as a fighter pilot when he was younger, personally tutored by Henry Kissinger in foreign policy and affairs. I mean, they see the pieces of the puzzle slowly coming together if they could just, get rid of the Islamic Republic. And people in Iran have certainly been marching in the streets on occasion to, demand the Shah's return. So I think it's not unexpected or, unsurprising that Bolton and Pompeo are just looking at this and licking their chops because it's just too tempting.
Well, thank you for those remarks, Bruce. It's good to hear from you. It probably is tempting also, I would imagine, just because the Green Revolution looked for a while like it actually could move these imams out or do something about really making regime change happen.
Yeah.
And they look back at Obama and they say, he didn't do enough to support that. We're going to support it.
Yeah, and of course the problem with regime change is trying to figure out the day after. We know from experience in Iraq that it's easy to topple leaders. It's very hard to build a democratic state.
Isn't this really perilous, though, now? I mean, you've got carriers going and you've got the chance of something really breaking out into war, especially when there's all this, militant rhetoric going on, but also just the fact that so much monitoring is going on as well that any little thing can be turned into a major incident.
No miscalculation. It gets easier and easier by the day. You look back, I remember writing a thesis on World War I and the fact that a very minor incident, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, not minor for the Archduke, but should be minor for the world, led to, the First World War. Thinking through If you're constantly preparing for war, there can be a point at which it's only a tiny step to act, and then all you need is an Archduke Ferdinand assassination to have a war break out. So let's hope we have matured beyond that as societies and as a world.
Listener writes, what happened to the UN? Does anyone care about the UN anymore?
You know, if the UN didn't exist, we'd have to invent it. So I think we feel comfortable railing against it because we know it will survive our rude remarks.
And here's Rob. Rob, you're on the air with us with Jane Wells. Hi. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you. I disagree with about 99.9% of Trump's policies and how he conducts himself internationally. But when it comes to dealing with China, I don't really see any other way but what he's doing is to act tough, because they have been ignoring WTO rules since, I don't know, for the last 20 years. They dump products on American markets at below cost to take over the markets for those products, like tires and windows and all kinds of things. They steal intellectual property, just flaunting it. They've been promising they were going to change that for years, and they never do. Isn't this probably the best bet at getting China to actually play by the world's rules?
So I think you're absolutely right that China has not been playing by the world's rules. I don't know if it was admitted to the World Trade Organization too soon, but they're not abiding by its set of guidelines and rules.
And I'm not sure tariffs would change that, frankly.
Yeah. But I think that, the one area where you see Democrats and Republicans coming together on Capitol Hill on foreign policy is in that sense that China needs to stop stealing intellectual property, et cetera, subsidizing and other problems. I think the conduct of the diplomacy, the way we're going about it, may be less useful. That is to say, there's a tendency on the part of the Trump administration to try to create almost a win-lose situation, to humiliate, in order for us to win, the other guy's got to lose. A successful negotiation is a win-win, right? You're seeking both sides get what they need. And what's important to us is that we get what we need, not that they lose what they need.
There's a listener who says, you speak about Trump and his policies as if you know that he has an underlying set of principles. He seems more mercurial and just a moody individual without a serious set of principles to drive him. There's another listener who says, my 29-year-old daughter returns from working 6 years in China, and I am encouraging her to join World Affairs Council. I recall belonging at that age, enjoying the general programs and also some social events oriented toward young adults. How are you attracting the younger adults to enjoy and contribute to this great organization?
That's really a fun question, because it's been a key interest of ours. There are a couple of things that we have learned since our founding in 1948, and one is how people learn. They don't learn by sitting passively and hearing a lecture. They learn by doing, engaging, and that is particularly notable amongst millennials and younger, but it's probably true of all of us. And so we have done things like create, first place we now have the audience engage directly with the speaker, ask their questions directly after the radio show taping. The second thing we've done is introduced opportunities for purpose-driven action. That's the Global Philanthropy Forum and others. And third, we started something called Conversation Starters, which are curated conversations amongst about 20 people. No speakers. They're the speakers.
Well, the World Affairs Council has thrived and grown under your leadership. Congratulations for all that you've done on that score. And younger listeners, take heed. It's a great organization. Good to have you, Jane.
Thank you so much.
Going to be hard to fill those shoes of yours. We have another segment of Forum coming up. Kevin Fagan's going to join us. We're going to talk about the new figures on homelessness. Stay tuned. That's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.